Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome.
Now we have to do a redo because the stupid.
I'm going to say hello and greetings to the Blog Talk listening fans. We have a new opening.
Yes,
the switchboard did not comply. I know everyone loves the Get Naked song. I love the Get Naked song. We're trying for a little different, a little softer intro to give you guys a little break because some people turn the archives and their hair stands up when they hear the Get Naked. I love the Get Naked. But we will try something new. Why don't you partake?
I will do it.
You can get this thing to comply, and we will
All right, here we go.
Shuffle in again from the clouds.
That sounds a little crusty. I'm going to have to
tinny.
Fix that. Yeah, I'll fix it. All right, so it's our first one. You know, next week we'll have a new song up there, and it will sound clear.
Yeah, well, we only had a week to prepare, but that's okay.
Well, I just did it in 8 seconds, so what can I tell you?
Exactly. Well, we started this engineering feat at around 8:35. So.
Right.
So, anyway, we are in the middle of the... sort of the confluence of many different things going on in the world. About 10 o'clock tonight, we have Tina Fey, lookalike Sarah Palin, going to make her speech to the Red Meat Convention there in Minneapolis as they attempt to throw all sorts of poo at Obama and Biden. I'm not sure if the world would buy it, though, this time. It seems very hollow. I watched Thompson last night, you know, the consummate eco, trying to get himself into some kind of a strange sort of Howard Beale-type state from Network. He's just mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore, and this Obama guy. I mean, they tried to paint Obama out as some type of Washington insider, when you've got McCain there, who's like Methuselah, you know, on the top of the ticket, it's like, who's, and they're cheering everything. It's like they're just a bunch of, I don't know, it's like a, you're really looking at a pep rally here. Why don't we just stand at the marshmallows and you know, yay for the blue team, yay for the red team, and who cares? I mean, just put me on ice until this is over with.
Yep.
And, you know, we had the hurricane blow through New Orleans, and they got out of town okay, and now there's, like, two other storms like teeing up to come up the East Coast, and basically the world is on sort of on red alert in every direction.
Uh-huh.
George Bush, again, handling the crisis as best he can. Kind of cracks me up. He absolutely cracks me up. If we literally put... what's his name there from, what do you call it? Farrell, what's his name? The actor. Will Farrell.
Yeah.
We literally put Will Farrell in the White House and in his Bush impersonation clothes or the other guy, what's his name, the fat guy.
No, could you narrow it down?
You know, the guy does the impressions. What the hell's his name?
Oh, Caliente?
Yeah. Put him in the White House. For a couple of months, and let him just basically act like George Bush. Could he do any worse? I've never seen a guy...
Personally, I think the guy's a phony.
Yeah, well, it just cracks me up how he handles things. Everything he does, it just seems like no matter what goes on, there's like, you could just tell, there's like reams of these handlers and little minions running around trying to make this guy look, you know, somewhat competent all the time. I can't wait till the Oliver Stone movie comes out. That is a must-watch for the SomaSapes out there. The Oliver Stone rendition of George Bush's life, called, a movie called W, coming out next month right before the election, which would just be, I mean, every woman with leg hair and armpit hair will be trucking over to see that.
Can I go too?
Out the vote. Oh, of course, yeah.
All right, because otherwise, I have to start growing it now.
That's right. School season has started, and what is that called? Is it G? What's the abbreviation for that? Lugs?
Oh, lugs, yes.
Yes, lugs. The lugs are all slithering their way back onto campus.
That's just wrong, man.
Getting their freak on. Hey, I didn't know what the heck it was until you told me.
Well,
they didn't have them in Albany. They were real live lesbians in Albany with the shaved heads and everything.
Do you think the listeners know what a lug is?
I think they should know. Urban Dictionary probably has it up there, right?
I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, a lug means lesbian until graduation.
Right. A little experimenting and back to the boys.
Yeah, I used to call them bicurious when I was in school, or the trisexual, trying anything.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that what college is all about?
I thought so, yeah.
See, I should have gone away to college. I really blew it.
I basically took half of Long Island with me when I went to SUNY Albany, and that was when it was in the top 10 party schools in the country, and I majored in biology, and I minored in the podiating, as they called it, on the podium there, the hacky sack crowd, and the pot dealers and runners all over the place, and parole officers, and various militia groups and radicals. There's always a protest going on. They're protesting everything. I think that if I close my eyes, the recurring sound I hear is when they changed the grouper law in Albany and broke up the budding fret community, the Greek community, off campus, and everybody had to scatter. And then they took the open container law out, so you couldn't even walk around with one beer in your hand. So they stormed the administration with the chant that rained all over campus, and there had to be about 10,000 people at this demonstration, screaming this over and over again: beer balls bounce, bottles break. That was it. That was the collective intelligence of the 20,000 students of SUNY Albany. Beer balls bounce, bottles break.
Nice.
And we basically proceeded to destroy the campus and overturn computers and all kinds. They caused like thousands of dollars of damage to protest the alcohol law there. So yeah, there you go. There's your undergrad degree. You get out of there without a sexually transmitted disease or a kid or two as you leave at the bus terminal and you proceed on to adulthood.
Well, perhaps I was better off staying here instead of going away.
I get flashbacks. Albany's one giant hangover to me.
How many years did it take you to get your undergrad degree?
Four. Started in 83, left in 87, then skipped. Yeah.
Right, four. With all the partying you did, you know how many years it took me?
11. Well, you went way up the deep end on the partying eco.
11. I didn't want to be in school, and then I wanted to go back, and then I wanted to work. I was very eco. Very eco? Did you hear that? Was?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're eco in the past tense. I'm
much better now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're just shoulder to the grindstone up there. Holy flipping cow.
Oh, man.
So here we are. You know, there's been a lot of talk on and off the air. I don't know if you guys have been following along. I've forged somewhat of a kinship with one of our guests we had on earlier this summer, Mike Silva from New York Baseball Digest, who has taken the profiling Kool-Aid.
He's loving it.
He is drinking it down. And we've been over on blogsoma.net. I just did a little motif to explain some of the things I talked about last Sunday on the show. He's had me on during the pennant race, so we have, you know, in baseball they use a lot of statistics, just like in a lot of other fields. They kind of do things very left brain, very external, very third person, very cognitive. And he wanted to get the somatic viewpoint equal time, so he got me on there. He kind of flipped the baseball card around, look at the person, not the statistics there. And went on there a couple days ago with one of those sabermetricians that use these baseball stats, a compass that pretty much predict everything that's going to happen. And it was a very interesting conversation. And he had me on again earlier today on the New York Baseball Digest show talking about the new Philo on the Mets staff, John Neese, who literally put on a hoodie last night. He was so embarrassed by his performance in the fourth inning that he was seen in the dugout wearing a hood over his face with his glove covering his face like a little kid.
Well, you don't think that that had anything to do with his family getting those little neat hats with the embroidery on it?
Well, that's exactly right. He was davening. He was embarrassed. The family with the hats,
oh,
the whole thing.
God.
Just the whole Philo spectacular going on. And of course, like I was explaining on the show, if you follow the Mets at all, they're loaded with Philos that are on all these key infield positions. And every catcher they have is a Philo. So every time he got in trouble, they'd all run to the mound. You okay? You okay? And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's like watching the Peanuts. You needed someone to come in and slap them. And then, you know, contrasting that to the ninth inning when they had Luis Ayala in there, Arenado, who had pulled his groin the other night and was getting tattooed all over the park in Florida, he was getting pissed. And every time they came out to talk him down from the trees, he was cursing at them. Get away from me! I'm doing work here! He yelled at the catcher, that basically, STFU.
Mm-hmm.
The catcher was like, are you all right, man? Get back there and just catch this pitch. I gotta get out of here. And as soon as the game was over, he went completely eco, melted out. He was it was like Mardi Gras fan. So you watch this range of emotions with these guys. It's really especially this time of the year, you just see a lot of the sort of the background noise, and these people kind of come to the front and
mm-hmm.
make a lot of dramatic twists and turns in the pennant race. So we're gonna be doing that every Sunday night over on New York Baseball Digest. You can catch the replays and the highlights at nakedsummonation.com. So, we're with the new theme song we're working on here, all kinds of things we have to upload and kind of tweak around. And so if you're interested in getting on the end train, just pop an email over to us at nakedsummon@gmail.com, and the lovely Lota will get in touch with you about us maybe working offline for you and looking at your company, your industry, giving you some of the strategies, the way to apply profiling. And what is profiling, by the way, Filippi? Why don't you explain that to us, you jerk?
Listen, you know what? Our listeners should know, but, you know.
Yeah, all 10 of them. Yeah, well, basically, profiling is something that your brain does with or without you noticing it. Sometimes when you notice it, it almost makes it more difficult to do because everybody has a point of view, and that point of view has an agenda, and it sorts for information that reinforces the identity that allows you to feel the most competent, the most safe, the most in control of your environment at any given point in time. So the process of profiling is something that isn't conscious, and so your job is to sort of align those two worlds together so you know that the feelings and the images and everything that you're kind of getting on the inside are actually guiding you to a higher state of organization rather than the lower one as you sift and sort for the elements in the environment that allow you to feel the most aware and the most in sync with things. So we teach this process. You could go take a peek of it and take a look at the way we use entertainment to do that on nakedsummon.com. You can download the S-List ebook, and it gives you, I think, 100 total celebrities that will give you an equal opportunity to use all four perspectives that your brain uses to come up with these strategies developmentally. And why don't you just give them like a sample of one of each, you know, on the S-List so they get an idea of how these different perspectives. You can just look at an image and say, you know, here's someone you're going to see in the news all the time, and that when that picture hits your brain, it triggers a certain reaction, and that's either going to empower you or it's going to make you feel more relaxed and more safe when it's a female image. We'll go over that in a little bit, but just see if you can give them two for each one. We'll just go through.
Yeah, all right.
So,
you actually had me doing some work with those.
Yeah, the other day, yeah.
Yeah,
because the biofeedback,
actually helps.
I mean, people, yeah, well, the thing is that no one realizes it, but there is picture power in the brain. The brain is 90% driven by vivid visual images, so the more conscious you can get of those images, then you get to have the voluntary system override a lot of things that you're holding in residually, and you can dissipate a lot of tension. It's sort of like the what would Jesus do, you know, well, what would George Clooney do? And if you have the affiliation.
Yeah, I like that much better.
Exactly, well, most people would. And they have a much more kind of a coherent relationship with people like that than they would like their mailman or their neighbor or someone they have more noise with, because
right.
Those celebrity images have more signal. We used to call them soma stars, you're able to project that image in your head without a lot of background noise and bias getting in the way, like happens in intimate relationships. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll go around
all
the
right.
horn. A couple
Let's
of phyllos,
see.
A male and a female.
How about Will Smith?
All right.
One of my favorites.
Will Smith.
And Alyssa Milano.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now okay. both of those images, see, they're phyllo in the sense that when you hear their name or see their image, immediately you get a bonding experience with them. You feel safe. There's a vulnerability to both those people. They don't feel like they're going to attack you. All that comes out just in the composite of their image. 9 times out of 10, they can always show you another side. But again, this is their primary domain, the primary way they present themselves to you socially. That's their social identity. Okay,
uh-huh.
So that's the phyllos. And remember, the phyllos occupy about 68-70% of the population. So the phyllos in the celebrity community have even more of a way to guide people through things because of the fact that they have more numbers. So that's
yeah.
the first
mm-hmm.
and most important one to know. And actually, the biggest distinction to make is if the image is phyllo and making you feel like you're safe and making you feel like someone is with you and present with you, open up a family album, look at any ads in like L.L. Bean. I mean, they're just everywhere. So that's them. Then you have the sort of the alpha phyllos that become the next perspective, the onto.
That's right. All right.
Which only refers to them. So give us two of them.
All right. How about the vile Dr. Phil?
There you go.
And the titillating Madonna.
Sure. There's a pair. Put them in a Pinto. who's driving that truck?
Oh, man. So,
again, if you hear those people's names, you feel the eyes upon you. If either one of them walked into your room or a family dinner or anything that you felt that they were the outsider, immediately they would take over the room just by their physical presence. The image they project is extremely direct, very intense, and isolating in the sense that there is a clear definition between you and them. Where with Will Smith and Alyssa Milano, there's sort of a wee-wee there going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very glammy, sticky, bondy thing. Not so much you want to walk up and hug Dr. Phil or even Madonna,
no.
although she might want to hug you for other reasons, but she's kind of a frother. but that's the distinction. That's 80% of the population of those two types of people, the extremely supportive and the extremely assertive image that they put out in those two social identities. Then we get into the two that are kind of 20% of the picture. That's sort of the bridge, Charlie, between them. Let's go to the ecos for 200.
All right. One of my favorite ecos would be the Snoop Dogg.
Snoop, yes.
Gotta love Snoop.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, who are we going to put him in the Pinto with? You know what would be funny to put him in the Pinto with?
Uh-huh.
We got to put him in with Lindsay Lohan because, you know, they might want to smoke a joint together.
I think the two of them might find the paraphernalia, Andy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, those two, again, you're dealing with an emotional vibe there. So it's a slightly different image that the phyllos would put out, but it's still more of a body-centered image. It's more of an energy. It's more of kind of a vibration or an atmosphere, especially with Snoop, that kind of travels around them, a world within a world, like that guy LaFontaine that died, the movie guy.
Yeah, too bad about
in
that.
In a world where pot has gone, you know, you're into the eco's world more than you enter into their presence. And there's just certain things, there's certain elements. It's almost like driving in from the country to a city. You can kind of like, you're driving into Vegas in the desert, you can just sense you're getting closer to this energy, and that's what an eco's like. Puts out a very obvious emotional vibe around them, and there's sort of that sort of atmosphere, like I said, that you're not so much bonding with them as you are with their world. So that's
uh-huh.
the eco. And then the last one, not least, but the last one, the one that has the most complex, most advanced, most technologically superior way of being in the world of the exos. And actually, Letterman was just in the news. I was going to say about that in a minute. But let's give you two exos as an example of two exos you come across in the culture on a regular basis.
All right. How about the Clint Eastwood?
Sure. Old man, yes.
And someone who's near his age. How about B. Arthur?
Now, there you go. I always think of that.
That's a pair.
Her History of the World moment with Mel Brooks.
She always cracked me up. I love
what are
that
you? Stand-up
of...
philosopher. Did you bullshit last week? Did you try to bullshit? Right. So, yeah, there's two people. Now, again, that you got to look at the difference between their counterparts, the Antos, where the Antos are coming at you from a spirit of inclusion or exclusion, much more kind of a horizontal way of evaluating you. Are you in my crowd or not in my crowd? Are you with me or against me sort of a thing, kind of a square off. The exo is outside their own body, and their evaluation is this person superior to me or inferior to me? And when they perceive someone as being superior to them, they seek to take their pins out and sort of find flaws in their ointment, and they go into an invalidation mode. They kind of question you down to the ground. And when they perceive you to be inferior, then they trample on you. So there's never any equality with that particular domain, and you will feel almost like a sense of subordination or seniority with any image you get of an exo. So you take a look at them on the ebook there on the S list, and you'll immediately feel a sense of there's no bond, there's no connection, there's just this feeling of going uphill or downhill. With it's like a greater than or a less than sign, and for each one of these people's images, and you just play with that. And you can definitely feel that in any corporate structure or any kind of a vertical environment that has a sense of sort of a top down kind of a mentality. That's the exo vibe of sort of running things machine-like, you know, where there's a definite order of things and a structure to things. So there's your four basic perspectives. Now, everything you experience on a somatic level, which basically means everything that you feel and act on, not so much get to think about, gives you those four different angles on things. And your job as a profiler is to see which one of those four offers you the most clarity in the moment. And the moment is defined as something that's very simple, very easy to come by. Called a four-second window. It's about how long your eyes can focus on the image before it's going to process something or make a decision or move to another image that's more compelling. So that's, you know, kind of the staring kind that you have going on with the world. And for the most part, when you interact with other people, if you're moving your eyes before the 4 seconds, then you're sort of going on memory, and if you're going after the 4 seconds, you're sort of waiting for an intuitive hit, and you're going to experience more things flooding up. So that middle ground between 1 and 7 seconds, about 4 seconds, is what your brain needs to kind of figure out if it's in a safe environment or if it needs to move to a different one. And that's kind of what we're getting at here. This is what's our approach with this stuff. We call it universal somatics because everybody has to do this. You can't avoid it. And the other part of it is that this is a way to get out of the dependency on the drugs and the therapies and relying on the crap from your past, to get through and survival. This is a way to evolve and use images as a way to kind of shape the way you experience internally and then how you express yourself externally through different behaviors. So we have, you know, a lot of applications for it, but on this show, we're trying to get a little deeper into the concepts behind it. So our guests come on and we kind of go down their street a little bit and see if they can explain some of the stuff we come up with their work. So I think what time for the guests? Did they see you there yet? Or?
No.
I'm not not up on the board yet.
Nope.
It's not there yet. It's like 20 after 9.
Yes, actually.
This is a problem.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, do you want to go fish her out and I'll keep bantering here?
Well, I just sent that over to our friend to see if she could do that.
Oh, okay, because she's been looking forward to calling us, but we have a time difference. I'm not even sure where she's calling from, what part of the country she's in.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, what might be good is if we went over the candidates real quick so that since they're just blowing up the TV screen lately, maybe our listeners would like to, you know.
Well, just now we got some tickets.
Domain.
We haven't talked about the tickets yet.
Mm-hmm.
Last week Biden jumping on the ticket with Obama. You know, you look at the two of them. It's very funny because you got a lot of this age difference in both tickets that they've been really trying to market and kind of spin to appeal to different parts of the base, where Obama, the change agent, new guy in Washington kind of guy, his exo was all get out. And so alternatively, they either, you see the media either putting him on a pedestal and he's Kennedy-like and he's godlike, and the next day, oh, what a phony, he's not black enough. It's like there's never an even ground the way that they perceive this guy because he's exo. And then you have Biden, who's such a raw, sloppy eco. It's all over the map. He's just kind of a yard dog. He's a guy that barks around, and you just kind of get the feeling like he's never going to do anything that stupid or that screwy, but he's always going to make a lot of racket. So when you watched him last week, especially the photo opportunities and all the other stuff, you just saw the coexistence of those two images. They can pretty much occupy the same space because one is going to be structural and very kind of steady as it goes, and the other one's going to be kind of all over the place. And so they can kind of be right alongside each other without ever really having to be connected, but they could kind of cooperate and coexist across the aisle.
So that's like Rick and I.
Well, yeah, any couple would you see that with, and it's those are the more stable relationships in the sense that they can have different interests and they can have different careers even, you know, they don't have the different backgrounds, but they can always kind of share space and coexist because then there's not a real threat to each other's way of operating, where in the Onto Philo world, the Onto must dominate the Philo in order for that relationship to actually progress, because the Philo takes the perspective of being the subordinate all the time, and of course your Ontos assume total control of everything. So that creates that Edith and Archie kind of, you know, classic codependency situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so see, then you cross the aisle now. So you got the eco and the exo with Biden and Obama there, and then if you across the aisle, you've got this other situation where you've got Philo and Philo, which is nauseating.
I was just going to use that word, nauseating.
It's absolutely nauseating. It's like, you know, okay, we're going to have chocolate cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the next month, you know?
And we're going to wash it down with a six-pack of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically just so frothy and so yeasty in the way that everything is going to become so just disgustingly candy cotton. Because they're gonna try to create stories around almost ridiculously tall tales about each one of these characters. McCain might come in on Thursday night, you know, in a fighter plane and land in Minneapolis, you know, shooting at the illegal aliens coming in from Canada. You know, they're gonna pump up his hero image, and same thing with Sarah Palin, who you know. If you look at it on paper, she's got five kids, one's pregnant, and the other one is a two-year-old or barely a two-year-old Downs kid.
I think
and
4 months, no?
I thought she was much... No, I thought the kid was a little older than that. Maybe I'm wrong.
The baby's 4 months. I don't know. I can't keep the... She's got too many kids for me. I can't.
The Downs kid she just had last year. I thought the kid's only 4 months old.
Yeah, isn't one of them's only four. I think so. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but check on that fact. That's a little
tidbit. I'm looking.
But the thing is that... If she has this kid that has all these needs, campaigning for the next 3 months is not a contradiction in the whole family first thing? And
she's got the Mr. Mom thing going on.
Right. I forgot. Mr. Mom in Alaska with the Downs kid.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a very difficult sell to have two Philos. But, you know, like I said, she looks like Tina Fey. And
uh-huh.
So... And she would definitely win the swimsuit contest among the four of them. So yeah, she's not unpleasant to look at, but the stuff that comes out of her mouth makes you want to basically, pronounce to everyone and everyone that your genitals are not available, because she's coming for them. She's got a pretty strong stance on abortion. She's got, you know, obviously with this situation with her daughter. And so that they picked someone who can throw the red meat around with their base, and who completely is subordinating herself to McCain. So if he keeps his heart beating for 4 years, I suppose she can fetch his coffee and make some nice pastries for him, and go in the back rooms and twist some arms, and you know, a complete departure from Mr. Cheney. what isn't? But I'm curious to see how Biden plays her in a debate situation.
I have the information here.
All right, then.
Okay, did you hear the kids' names, by the way? Because I just have to say them again. Okay, they have the two sons, Track? And Trig. Trig is the one with the Downs, and born in 2008, so that's a little bitty one. And then the daughters are Bristol, Willow, and Piper.
There you go. So hippie family. Well, the husband must be eco. I haven't seen the husband's picture yet, but
he's got to be. He's all over the place. He's like Mr. Mom, and then he's a fisherman.
He's a fisherman. Maybe he's exo. Who knows? He's either eco or exo, because to put up with that, I mean, naming your kids sort of like wilderness sounds. Trick and truck, and what the heck? sounds you make. Maybe the sounds you make when a fish lands in the dock. Trick, truck. Who knows? Very
man.
Strange. I can't wrap my mind around the entire concept that this woman's going to be a heartbeat for the presidency.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it promote terrorism if McCain won in an odd twist?
I don't know.
The jihadists
are going to
be. Well, the jihadists would be up in arms about having a woman lead anything. So they'd sort of be in a paradox, wouldn't they?
Sure.
If we kill McCain, then the woman leads, and then we can't have that.
Well, no matter what side wins, we're making history. It's going to be very interesting.
Well, yeah, as we slide off the planet,
but
there's a lot of contradiction in this campaign. There's a lot of agenda jockeying going on. So we'll see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
So has anybody heard from Kathy Snow?
Word is that the voicemail was left.
Oh, she didn't even answer her voicemail?
I'm thinking maybe she got her dates mixed up.
Well, I have an email that says she'd be looking forward to talking to us, like, the next day.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, stuff happens. Maybe she had some sort of emergency or, you know.
Oh, you got it.
Is she eco?
I think so.
Oh, well, all right, then.
Yeah, exactly. Say no more. I don't know why.
Well, we can always reschedule
her.
Well,
we really wanted to get into this tonight with Kathy. Let me just see. The last email I got from I think, was this morning. I see, because we're going back and forth about stuff.
Yeah, she's a very interesting person.
Yeah. Well, we still got time to talk to her. It's just
sure.
Kind of strange. So here it is, 6:36 last night. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Well, again, you know, you never know. Something might have come up, or maybe her phone lines are down. Where is she?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Let me see.
I got 719. She's in Colorado.
Oh.
What number did,
All right, I'm asking.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Anyway, if you got any opinions about any of the stuff we've been talking about, you can give us a call here at 646-478-4847.
Right. Or you can jump in the chat room, or you
jump
can message
us. Jump in the chat
us.
Room. Yep, just throw a rock through your own window. Maybe we'll hear you. like I said, we're really kind of turning this thing on its ear a little bit, because we've done about almost 70 shows, talked to a lot of SAPES from all over the place. And we're really trying to get you guys involved and to get to the point where we can do a show that's an extension of something else we're doing between shows, so that we can use this forum to answer questions and get people, you know, more motivated to do it. Because the more people that are out there profiling, you're going to get a lot more a kind of a clarity within your own self, and then within your relationships as well. And it becomes a real simple way to separate individuals from their behavior and the experience of other people from the existence of other people, because a lot of times your bias gets in the way and you have sort of a preconditioned way of reacting to certain people based on your prior experience of them or based on the way you sort and type and profile yourself. So this, like I said, it's all about profiling, is all about the physiology that allows you to feel safe and competent, and sometimes that process kind of keeps you from experiencing things that are new and compelling for you, because you feel like, oh, I'll lose my stability. And that internal struggle of wanting to feel free and needing to feel secure is really where we're trying to get you guys through, so that you can get out of relying on the kickstands out there and relying on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Very helpful stuff. You guys need to go to the site. You need to download the book. And you need to read it. It is extremely helpful. Anybody that we've ever taught this stuff to has said how much it's changed their life. I mean, listen to AM. Boy, she really, she's changed her whole life. And how she deals with people. All right. That's the same. Wait a minute. Is that the same number? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Voicemail.
Amazing.
You know, stuff happens.
Might want to try an email to her. I don't know if you did that, but...
We haven't
had a guest completely... We've had all kinds of phone problems with people, but... You know,
if our phones are working.
What if our phones are working? What do you mean? Waffle Lion? I'm on the air.
No, I know that. We're on here now, but... Look, it's Blog Talk.
Yes, true. We can't rule that out.
Let me go grab my cell phone.
Why don't we see if we get a caller?
Yeah, anybody who's out there, could you call in to see if you can
call in to see if the phone works.
It's 646-478-4847. Bueller.
Yeah,
come on,
Bueller.
Somebody call
anybody
in.
Out there?
Oh, I can't stand it.
Bob Costas has an opinion on this system.
Yes, he does.
Mm.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I tell you, that just changed my entire way of seeing him, too. It's great.
Probably going on about 15 weeks in a row we've been playing that.
I don't think we'll ever stop. Although
it's
we haven't played
show.
Sue in a while.
Oh.
She's a good one, too.
We'll play that if this eco calls in.
All right, I'm gonna dial in. I have to go outside because I don't get service in the house here.
Well, you're dialing in from your cell because we don't have any callers. That's good.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to go out back, and I could be eaten by a mountain lion. But hold on, let me see how I do out here. I don't see any wild beasts, I don't think.
I hear crickets.
Yeah, you hear how loud this people that listen here?
Wild crickets, man.
You hear this? This is the country. Nice, huh? All right, I'm dialing in. Oops, I dialed the wrong number. Freaking eco.
Update the pennant race. The flipping Phillies are up 5-4 in Washington. In the bottom of the seventh inning, yeah, they were losing 4-3 when I looked before, and now they're winning 5-4. So we could just put a little silent vigil out. Oh, you got on?
Yep, went through. Alrighty then. Well, I could at least hear. I don't know if you saw me on there or not. Making my way back into the house, trying not to step on frogs, salamanders, lizards. I don't know what else is out here.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Mm-hmm. So if anybody out there knows where Kathy Snow is from disabilitiesnatural.com, her interview time is dwindling away. We'll scant 22 minutes right now.
Well, that's a good thing that we're yapsters.
Yeah, like we care.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to talk to her, but the half the equation is them dialing in to us.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. Have you been watching these Verizon commercials with the guy from Cablevision? I thought it was Lucky Louie, but I don't think it is. It looks just like him.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's not him. He's a little heavier than Louie, like a bigger guy. Yeah, I have seen him.
Yeah.
You're right. I didn't
that.
Think about that.
I had a little eco moment just now watching it.
Yeah, well, so. We have those. All right, let me see here.
So when do you start teaching next week? Does your class start?
Officially, the semester has started, but it started on a Wednesday, and I have a Tuesday class. So.
Okay, so next
I
week
I got an
is
extra
the,
week off.
What is this class on Tuesday nights?
This is the Theories of Counseling.
Wow.
At the graduate school, yeah. Yeah, and I have a huge class for that particular school.
All right, well, we're looking forward to getting the fresh crop of FBCs into the fold and getting them all profiled up.
Yep, that should be good. That should be good. And you're going to do some NLP with them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I'll do something
your favorite.
Close to that.
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Looking here. All right. My board just went down. Where'd it go?
Oh, really? That's nice.
Okay. It is back.
Hmm.
All right.
So anyway, now that we're pretty much flat-footed here, we're about 20 minutes to go, we have to start thinking about the entire month. So let's just, I know that next week we have a pretty special guest. Bill O'Hanlon, I think, is next week, right?
I think so. I have not been keeping track because someone else has been doing that for us, but yeah.
I think Bill Hamlin. And then the 17th, we just got somebody confirmed that that's a somatic practitioner type that deals with somatic resources.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy we got into this last week about, you know, the whole thing about a soma and all that. Don't get concerned about that because it's just you and the world. That's all you got to know about with somatics. Don't go dividing yourself up into physical and mental and spiritual and all that woo crap. It's only going to make you tired. At the end of the day, you wake up, you feel the floor, and guess what? It's you and the world. So if you deal with it in that kind of solid snowball kind of way, the interface between how you interact with yourself and how you interact with the outside world becomes the grand conversation. And so we try to get people on that either focus on explaining the social side of it or the biological side, and extend some of the thoughts we put out in the ebook and some of the things we put out on different websites so that you guys can go apply it. There's nothing worse than having all this great stuff and then not having a way to go use it. Now, you know, like I said, we hooked up with Mike Silva over at New York Baseball Digest, and he's been applying it because his world, the world, again, that fun thing, in a world of baseballs, you know, was all stats. It was all about, you know, looking at external stuff and not looking at, like, things I was talking about last night that was going on. That was the actual human dynamic of executing, the playing the games. And this is what the drama is. It's not about, when you're watching a game, you're not watching a bunch of statistics. That's the ashes. That's the fossil remains. That's the box score at the end. That's what's left behind. What's actually happening in there is really, you know, it's human nature playing out. So it's like, that's why in the container of a baseball game or a political campaign or any of the other things we've been talking about, you have these control parameters, things that kind of keep things in context, keep things. So when you think about all the things that you're looking out the window at every day, whether it's your social life, whether it's your career, whether it's other transitions you're going through internally, aging, dealing with other people dying, all kinds of stuff, all of that is part of your identity, and your identity is being guided and shaped by these choices you're making physiologically of how you're going to orient yourself. So knowing you have just four choices on the menu and only 4 seconds to pick one, it makes kind of a fair fight. That's why when you're dealing with limitations and you're dealing with suffering and you're dealing with all kinds of pain, you're dealing with what we call low coherence. And you have to learn how to function in low coherence, just like you have to learn how to drive in the snow and the horrible weather and things like that. You can't do much about those conditions. You have to learn how to operate there. And so knowing that when you're in a fog like that, and things get, you know, kind of whited out, you can't really see where you're going, the orientation you take is very exo. You get very task-oriented because it's all about being accurate, not being fast. Uh-huh. Exos are methodical. They're task-oriented. It's very kind of squared off. So the wave slows down and becomes almost impersonal because you have to become machine-like to operate in that kind of a fog. And then when things speed up and they become more emotional and more eco, it's not that they become more clear, they just become more visual. You can actually see your way through. Like, it's almost like that moment you can see your way out of the traffic jam, and you can see your way. It's that moment of release, Charlie. Like the end of a good massage.
Oofa.
Don't bump. You know, where you can actually just, like, not so much about the sexual release, don't go there, just that feeling of all that tension's been moved out of your body, and you can actually relax. It's almost like the moment where you kind of fall asleep in the chair, where you just let go. And that's what the egos are dealing with, is that impulse to let go, to not have to control, to let things flow, let the world kind of, like, you know, take them in. And then when you get all the way up the tree and you're dealing with peak performance, it's that King Kong swatting the planes away. You feel powerful. You feel your strength. You feel you can function at the peak. Because a lot of people have never been at their peak. I ask people all the time, name me one time you've been at your best at anything. And you just watch them ponder away. They don't even know what it is.
So I'm pondering myself.
Yeah, if you've never been at your peak, how do you know what your peak is? You have no clue, no way of figuring that out. So all these things are orientation points, and the rise from the valley to the peak is where, you know, 70% of us spend our lives is in this uphill climb. And we try to all do it, you know, with, like, the elephants coming into the circus, you know, holding the tail of the one in front of you. And it makes it very difficult to progress because you're trying to do it, you know, sort of in harmony with all the other shapes around you when, you know, your future and your past and your present are completely solitarily yours. So discovering how to access the most functional and the most competent one is what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
83, what is this? Oh. So the number here again is 646-478. 4847. You want to get a question or comment in before we wrap this sucker up, as we have been stood up by the great and powerful Kathy Snow. Yeah, stood up. I feel rejected.
Oh, well, it's okay. You'll get over it.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
She's there.
Now?
I see someone. Yes.
Oh, hello.
Kathy.
Wow.
Hello, hello, hello.
It's Kathy.
Oh, my God. My deepest apologies.
Oh, what
happened?
Well, my mother, my 82-year-old mother is here visiting from Texas.
Oh.
And we got a movie for her to watch, and I lost track of time.
Oh.
And I got to own up to my screw-up, so I screwed up. And
You have confirmed our eco diagnosis?
Yes, we it's okay. Well,
I'll take it. Is that what it is?
Yes. So let's just introduce you for the audience's sake. This is Kathy Snow from disabilitiesnatural.com. Joining us here at the tail end of the show. We still got about 15 minutes to go, so we got enough time to really get some information across. But first, you must suffer the Sue Simmons admonishment, so we will play that for you.
No, jeez.
At 11, pay more at the grocer, but getting less will tell you how to get the most. The fuck are you doing?
There you go. That was a comment, I don't know if you're on the East Coast, but that was one of our newscasters locally that made it on the air, and she got in a lot of trouble. Yeah, so basically that is the code of the Tao of the eco, which is to sort of find the banana peel, and that's you know, what happened to you there. So I
found one tonight.
Yeah, no big deal. And again, your company is really, it's based on getting past the language of limitation, getting past the language of labeling, and looking at people from a much more kind of raw and sort of as-is perspective. So why don't you tell us about how the company got started and what it is that you're trying to define when you say the statement, disability is natural.
Well, the statement, actually, I wish that I could take credit for being that creative, but it actually came from federal law, believe it or not, and it's from the Developmental Disabilities Act that was first passed in the mid-70s, and has since been, you know, passed ever since then. And then, and that part of the law says that disability is a natural part of the human experience, and it goes on to explain, you know, in the preamble that therefore people with disabilities should, you know, have the same opportunities for integration and inclusion and productivity and all that kind of stuff as people who don't have disabilities. But I personally got into it because my son Benjamin, who is now 21 and is a college student and is in the Honor Society at college, was born and diagnosed with cerebral palsy when he was 4 months of age. And I just did not want the same kind of life that essentially the, you know, quote-unquote experts predict for children who are born with disabilities, who grow up to be adults with disabilities. And so I was, you know, fortunate enough to get to know adults with disabilities when my son was very young and to learn from them and realize that they indeed were the true experts, not the people who call themselves experts, and not that professional, you know, people can't provide us with helpful information, but the fact is they don't live with disabilities every day, and what do people with disabilities do? So, you know, I first heard the term disability is natural quoted from that law when my son was 3, and it started changing the way I saw everything about disability, and part of that is the whole our whole attitude and our perceptions, which, of course, are based on the words that we use. I mean, the words that we use create the reality of the life that we lead. And so I was very concerned about the, you know, antiquated, pejorative descriptors that were applied. And so I wrote an article about people first language. I did not create people first language. And all people first language does is put the person before the disability, makes the person more important than disability. It was created actually by people with disabilities back in the 70s. It's just taken a long time for it to catch on. So my whole thing is about changing attitudes and perspectives and the way we view disability and therefore the way we talk about and then therefore the way we treat people with disabilities, that they are more like people without disabilities than different.
Uh-huh. Wow. So applying it to some current events here, we got Sarah Palin about to take the podium here at 10 o'clock Eastern time, and she's dealing with you know, pretty much an infant with Downs.
Right.
And what would you say? I mean, politically, you got a lot of layers here to deal with as far as her coming from the Family Values Party, taking on the responsibilities of being, you know, on a ticket like this with an infant that, you know, I guess what they're saying here is fathering is just as natural as mothering. So as long as the kid has one parent around during this early developmental stage, that's going to pass muster with that very kind of traditional base, or is she kind of, you know, taking on new ground here?
Well, I think that some of the listservs that I'm on that are disability-related, you know, many of them are saying, wow, this is great. You know, it's almost like we ought to vote for her just because she has a child with Down syndrome. However, you know, I take a little more wait and see approach about it, in the sense that when Christopher Reeve, and y'all remember Christopher Reeve, you know, when he had his accident and was paralyzed. At that time, my son was very young, and in fact, my son loved Christopher Reeve as Superman. And whenever Chris Reeve had his accident, although I was, you know, sorry that it happened to him, another part of me was joyous and thinking, oh, good, now here's somebody, you know, very prominently that has a disability that now people with disabilities will be listened to. We will have a voice. However, and some people would, you know, disagree with me violently on this, I was just enormously disappointed at Christopher Reeve's take on things, that he did not believe that the Americans with Disabilities Act was important. He did not believe that assistive technology was important, even though it was keeping him alive. But his belief was, I will walk again. I will one day not have a disability. So he did not see anything in common with people with developmental disabilities that they're going to have them all their lives. He did not think it was okay to have a disability. He thought his life would not be okay unless and until he could walk again. And so in that regard, you know, I've realized that just because someone has a disability or is a family member of a disability doesn't mean they share the common values or the same visions, you know?
Well, he was a big backer of stem cell research and things like that because there's a completely different, entry point into any one of these situations when you're dealing with congenital versus acquired disability.
Correct. Yes, absolutely.
For the family and for the individual involved. So in his case, I mean, this is a guy that lived a completely different life for 40-something years of his life, fell off a horse and lived a different life from there on. And then the other mysterious thing, which not mysterious to me, but mysterious to the outside world, is how fast his wife went as soon as he
went.
Right. Because the drain on the caregiver is something that's become much more prominent as the culture's gotten older, and there's a lot more elder care going on in the home, done by people that are, you know, living their lives in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, taking care of people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, that are becoming partially or fully disabled. So what does your movement say about that, about the attrition that it takes a toll on the families and on the surrounding community around the person dealing with disability?
Well, I would say even, you know, with any type of language we use is important. And I wrote an article once, and there's a lot of articles on my website that people are welcome to download, and, you know, they can, you know, make copies of them, whatever they want, however they want to use them. Mm. But I even, you know, have problem with the term caregiver in this regard, that I'm, you know, some people would look at me and my husband and they would say, well, you know, whenever, you know, my son was younger, I was his quote-unquote caregiver, and as my son's gotten older and bigger, and, you know, he's bigger than me now. So my husband, you know, does a lot of, you know, the physical, you know, helping Benjamin transfer and stuff. And so they would say, well, you know, now your husband's a caregiver. But I would take issue with that. I'm his mother. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm his mother. I do what I do because I'm his mother. I don't want to be placed in the role of being caregiver. That's what mothers do. That's what fathers do. That's what a brother and sister would do. To me, a caregiver would be somebody that's paid to do it, and that's how I would see that. I mean, who else would do it except somebody who loves you and cares about you? Now, having said all that, you can't do it alone. I mean, a lot of times, but that's true of anything. I mean, you know, I can't do all the plumbing in my house. I can't do all the electricity. I can, you know, I can do some of it, but then I got to call in a plumber and pay him sometimes, you know, so that none of us, I don't think in any capacity, I don't think disability issues are any different than anything else in the sense that none of us can do it all. So to that degree, though, I think that the solution is not in the human services system or in, you know, it's not always in government assistance. I think most of us know that government does not have a lot of solutions to much of anything. So that to me, the solution is in the natural supports and generic services that already exist in our communities. That, you know, and that means that we have to form relationships with people. You know, we have to have friends and neighbors and be involved in things so that whenever we need assistance, we have a group of people to call on, recognizing the reciprocity is key, that a lot of people have helped me in my life. I might not be able to help those same people back in the same way or the same level or amount, but I can help other people. So to me, it's this constant give and take.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is one of those things, again, that we're dealing with the election, and as a father of a special needs child myself, I understand that if you lean on the system, whether it's the government assistance in the cases of the people that are dealing with these lifelong disabilities or the educational system and the ones dealing with more the functional or the developmental delays, the autistic spectrum kids and the LD kids, the system is not set up to overcome the limitations or to sort of support any type of a sort of an infrastructure there. They're more or less about liability. They're more or less about risk management and sort of a kind of a an interplay so those people don't become excluded. I mean, we're only what 20-21 years removed from the putting in all the handicap ramps and everything around and making things accessible. We're a generation removed from when those things weren't around.
Right, right.
You know.
Well, and I would go so far as to add to what you said that, you know, in addition to being about liability and risk and stuff, it's also, quite frankly, about the system. You know, while we like to look at it almost from afar as this benevolent, gentle hand of, father figure government or whatever, whatever you want to call
it. Right, right.
It also, in reality, is a business, and people are in the business in order to have a job. So to that degree, there are many people now that I don't think they stand around a water cooler talking about this, but if they don't have people with disabilities to be dependent on them, then they don't have a job,
mm-hmm.
right? So mm-hmm. it's like, okay, what kind of people that work in the system are going to be the ones who say, you know what, I'm going to do my best to help that person with a disability not need me so that they can go off and live the kind of life they want to live. And instead, we have too many people in the system, and run by the government, that makes people with disabilities dependent on them, which ensures a huge supply of jobs, contrasted with, the unemployment rate for people with disabilities in our country today is minimally 75%. If you look at people with more significant disabilities, the unemployment rate is 95 to 100%. So I find it ironic that, we have all these people who are trying to help people with disabilities, and they all have jobs, but people with disabilities don't have jobs. So it's like, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture here?
Yeah, the other thing is that we've been talking a lot about physical disabilities here for a minute. What about when you're dealing with people that have emotional or mental disabilities, schizophrenia, things like that, that are, organic and sort of established early on, and you see a lot of people now, especially when you're dealing with ones involving, antisocial behavior, whether it's sexual or violent or the pedophilia, all the things that are out there that are much more about the not so much about government assistance, but about law enforcement.
Right.
These people getting jobs and being able to function in society and being able to be, that fuzzy word, rehabilitated or made socially viable again as human beings. How do you deal with that with this very vague and very sort of open-ended concept of what a disability really is?
Well, you probably just asked $1 million question,
I'll answer it, yeah.
Well, well,
I got an answer, but yeah.
Well, what's your answer?
Well, simple. When we talked about this a little in the email, is that when you have the same vague and very open-ended concept of what normal is, abnormal or
right.
dysfunctional or disabled or whatever you want to call anything not normal becomes just as hard to define. You can't put a fork in either one of these things.
Well, that's
you're
right.
Serving,
that's right.
You're serving soup in the clouds. So
right.
what you
right.
have to start getting into is basically what is we talk about it in terms of coherence versus incoherence, and people have to be able to function in both environments, just like I was saying at the top of the show. When you learn to drive, you don't learn how to drive in a vacuum. You got to drive in harsh conditions and in ideal conditions. When someone is operating in harsh conditions, they're going to need more support.
Right.
And that support's going to come from internal, from themselves, and also come from people around them. And for the most part, we don't do that in this culture.
Right.
I agree with you.
When I do presentations, I ask people,
mm-hmm.
What's the mantra in real estate? Well, it's location, location, location. I say the mantra
mm-hmm.
for people with disabilities, and again, we can widen the concept of what we consider disability, but the mantra for them is going to be environment, environment, environment. That
mm-hmm.
whatever environment a person is in, they have to learn that they're going to be successful in that environment. So we put people in segregated settings. I mean, if you look at kids that say or adults that have, we're going to call them, emotional behavioral disorder, an EBD. So what we do in public school today is that we put all those kids in the same class.
Mm-hmm.
We put them in a segregated classroom. Well, that's where the EBD teacher is, so that's where we're going to put those quote-unquote EBD kids. And I put those in quotes because I would not really talk. I would say children with that particular diagnosis and put the child first. But so you wonder, and the question I ask is, if you or I, today decided to go out and join Hell's Angels, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in order to be successful in Hell's Angels, we would have to change our behavior. We would have to change the way we looked. We'd have to change the way we talked. We'd have to change the way we behave. We'd have to change probably what our values are. We have to make a whole lot of changes in order to be successful in that. Well, the same is true if you put people in the segregated setting. So if we look at, say, people who are in prison, and we, mm-hmm. I mean, prison is supposed to be a, you know, corrective, you know, mm-hmm. corrections institution, you know, rehabilitation. Well, what we know about most people that go in and out of prison is that mm-hmm. they don't come out rehabilitated. They come out as better criminals. So their environment has had a huge influence on them. And,
well, Kathy, I hate to pull us over here, but we're running out of time.
I'm so sorry. So, well, and I so apologize to you and your listeners.
Well,
that
we'd love to have you back on again soon. We'll get you back on again maybe in the fall after the election's over. We can see what came out on the other side. But
yeah, that's all. We'll just have you back on again. No big deal.
For
well,
now,
I would
we'll
love
say
that.
Disability is natural, but it's not timely sometimes. So so thanks a lot for joining us here on Naked Soma, and we will see you again real soon.
Thanks
you
all very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Take care. We're out.
On a Wednesday, I'm down in solitary. On a Thursday, I start up.